Welcome to Money Matters with certified financial planner Dave Pezzo. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Pezzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Pezzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Pezzo.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. Every Monday I come in and talk with Kevin Miller, and we're going to play that. I'll be live after that, so shoot us an email, and we'll talk to you soon.
And 580KIDO, Kevin Miller with you, blessed to be a part of your day. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580KIDO. Dave Pezzo joining us from the Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial, celebrating how many years on 580KIDO?
I think 30 now.
30 years.
Yeah. Is that crazy?
Look at all the businesses that have come and gone, people that have come and gone in those 30 years. Think of all the innovations that have happened. I mean, 30 years ago, I think cable television was kind of a new thing, if you will. Kind of new, I guess.
Yeah.
But the phones and everything else, some people still had, you know, phones with cords, and the phone was at your house.
The phone was at your house.
Yeah,
exactly
30
right.
years ago.
Yeah, those would be along. Oh, let's go get a big extension on it. Right,
right? You know? Thought you were something.
Yeah, because you could walk over into the living room 30 feet away. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's amazing. Any thoughts on that, 30 years?
It's amazing, and I can't believe I've gotten to do this for that long. Honestly, Kevin, it's an amazing thing. It's astounding when you think about it. To be on air and sharing life with so many different people who have come and gone, both in my work life, but also here on the radio. It's astounding to think you get to hang around and do this for 30 years. It'd be amazing to think I'd have a few more, and so I'm looking forward as well.
Well, what do you think? Another 20?
Why not?
I
enjoy what I do, Kevin. Why not? I don't think retirement at all.
As much as golfing?
No. I get to play golf. You know, I live on a golf course. Why wouldn't you know? So I get to play golf. But
no,
I'm
with
you. Can't play golf all the time.
But do you enjoy it as much as golfing, I guess?
I do. I actually, in many ways more. It's the balance, if you will. In many ways, I enjoy it more because there's such an intense interaction with people. And when you're solving problems in people's lives, it's a little different than, well, I mean, I love the casual getting to know people on a golf course. That's fantastic, too. But it's not the depth that you, when you work with somebody on their finances, death in their family, what are they going to do, if somebody gets sick, can I afford to retire? All these things are deep questions for people, and it's fun to go deep with people.
You know, when I was visiting the old country in New England a couple weeks ago, I was talking to a friend of mine, a dear friend of mine, lives in Ohio, who worked for the old Ohio Bell. Mm-hmm. I guess out here, was it Mountain Bell or Pacific Bell?
I think it was Mountain Bell. Yeah, it was Mountain Bell.
See, I know my
You
phone.
Are. You're pretty good.
I know my phone.
I couldn't have named it. Without your help there.
Yeah, because Mountain Bell, Southern Bell, Bell South, whatever. And worked very hard, has a pension.
Mm-hmm.
And then he told me, we were just talking about finances and stuff, because I'm always trying to prep for Pezzo. Always trying. And he said to me, he goes, you know, they gave me a buyout of my retirement.
Right.
And I go, what?
Yeah.
And they actually will do this.
A lump sum instead of a pension.
Right.
Yeah.
And he invested it in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing well.
Yes.
And I go, oh, I don't need to hear this.
No.
Dave Pezzo will be all about this. And I thought, how can someone buy out your retirement? How does that work?
Well, they do. It's you have a lump sum offer, and right now, I'll just go ahead and kind of the punchline is that right now, with interest rates as low as they are,
right,
it's a good deal for most people. But wow, is it dangerous, super dangerous for people. If they're, again, you have to be careful because now you're taking the risk of investing it. But everybody has a pension. A pension is going to say, like, or not everybody, but people that have
a
pension.
Not everybody has a pension.
That's right. Last time I checked, I don't either. I'm going to get with that guy that operates Pezzo Financial, and I'm going to have a talking to with him. I don't have a pension. Why I don't have a pension, I don't know. Okay. So if you take your pension, let's call it $2,000 a month, okay,
sure,
that you're going to get at age 65 or whatever. And now you're 65, and then the question is, what lump sum of money would it take in today's interest rate environment to replace that $2,000 a month? Okay, that's right. Really the equation, because they're more than happy to say, hey, you want the lump sum? Here's your $500,000, $600,000, whatever the number is, and you can take that, and then you can do as you please with that money, or it is a pension for
life.
Which
is scary.
Very. It is the right decision when interest rates are low, the right decision if you are willing to take the risk. It's the right decision today, but only if you can control your spending. Because you know a pension sticks you, right? You got $2,000 a month, so that's not going up. Hey, I get a couple thousand a month out of my lump sum of money, and you know, why don't we go ahead and get a car? It'd be just a one time thing. You know, it's just you know, kind of getting caught up on some expenses. Why don't we take a trip or two or three? And pretty soon you are not anywhere near that $2,000 a month. You're spending more, and then you're spending it out of your principal, which now means you're gonna have to take less in the future. It's a scary thing if you do not control your expenses going forward. And the final piece is of that, you now have the responsibility to invest it. Here's the problem for most people, right? You know, I don't like the news, what's going on. You know, with this election, it feels like the market's going to tank and stuff. Or let's go back a few years. What about all this Greek stuff and all this stuff going on in Europe? I mean, yes. I think it's going to be a meltdown. And what do people do? They step aside. They earn nothing on their money, and now they're trapped out. You better be able to handle it and handle your money well. And don't dump it into some stupid annuity out there, because that's going to kill you too, because it fixes your income the same. There's no point in taking it out of the pension and putting it into an annuity.
Right. Now,
that's what a pension is an annuity.
Right, but here's the other thing that that is interesting about this. I said to him, I go, well, you know, tell me about this person that's, you know, your planner. You trust him? He goes, yep, he's done very well for me. But, you know, and we haven't reviewed this in quite some time.
Yeah.
You know, finding someone who will be able to take care of you. I will say this, you know, my uncle, God rest his soul, who recently passed away, he saved like everything and invested and had a very good financial planner, and he was taken care of.
Yeah.
It's crucial. It's you know, everybody's scared. So when you're looking at a financial planner, someone who's going to do you right, there are many people that do you wrong.
Unfortunately, there are, Kevin, and it's true in any profession. There are people out there that are not very good doctors. They're not very good dentists. They recommend procedures that aren't necessary. They upsell you.
Yes.
When it's not necessary. There's nothing wrong with upselling if it's, you know, a protein shake or something after a workout. That's
I always like to go to my dentist, and when they say something, I go, oh, you're upselling me.
Yeah.
And they smile, but that's true, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it's yeah.
Right. The upsell.
The upsell's okay if it's not if it's a anyway. But we all know what are you going to do in the dentist chair? Yeah, it looks like we've got another issue here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we better fix the issue. Nobody wants to later have a root canal. So, but the point here is it is in many. All fields have bad actors. I think the thing that frustrates me the most is that we have a lot of regulation in our industry, Kevin. If you have a securities license, if you only carry an insurance license, it apparently is a license to steal. It certainly is a license to exaggerate the truth.
How tough is it to get licensed in your business?
It's not hard. It's not hard at all. You have a couple of days to study, a few days, maybe a week to study, and then boom, you have to take a test. And it depends on the depth. It takes a long time to become a certified financial planner. And this is where you start getting into what are you looking for? In my opinion, to do business with a non-certified financial planner is Russian roulette. It's absolutely silly. Why wouldn't your professional be dedicated enough to be seeking a higher level of education? And that has very strong requirements. And, Kevin, that takes several years to get.
Right.
And you have to have gone through college, all of those things that are required to be a certified financial planner. So that's what you look for. And then you also can look for under broker check through FINRA. They have a lot of information there that you can find out. Does that person have complaints, things like that? We saw a guy, believe it or not, Kevin, that had 10 complaints, and one of them was from his mother. Did I tell you? I did tell you that. Okay.
Dave Pezzo with us here at 580KIDO. We'll continue on.
Come on, Mom. I mean, seriously. Really. That's really bad.
Yes. Never want to do Mom wrong. No, not at all. So when last we talked, a little bit about Micron. We're always talking about Micron. Any news on Micron this week when we're talking earnings, when we're talking fourth quarter?
Yeah, the news you're going to have in micro, I remember here a couple weeks ago, they announced, and their quarter was okay.
Right.
But the good news there was they were talking very positively about the coming quarter and the coming year. Things are looking good. And as you know, Kevin, I did recently interview their spokesperson, so we'll have a lot of that. That'll play here in an hour upcoming.
Is that tease for the Petso show?
For Money Matters, Saturday, heard 8 to 10 on KIDO.
You're doing teasing now? That's great.
I'm working on it.
That's great.
After 30 years, I ought to be able to learn, pick something up from you.
That's right. I love the teases.
So we'll be talking about it in more detail. But the point is through those discussions that we've had with them, things are looking very good. That's not a go buy the stock. I'm just saying that's the reason the stock has moved up from $10 to over $17. And it does look decent going forward because prices have improved.
You know, speaking of improving, and this is interesting because we have a large contingent of folks that run call centers and such.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we talked a little bit about this last week. I don't know if you have any more intel on the AT&T Time Warner merger. We have folks, and we've seen this, DirecTV, they're going through a culture shock because you have AT&T coming in. And sadly, when these mergers happen, as you and I have discussed,
yep,
lenders want personnel cutbacks. Lenders demand efficiency. We see it in every business.
Yep.
So when we look at Time Warner AT&T, is this going to be, good for the consumer? And what about the employees? Any more thoughts on this mega merger?
Yeah, there's a couple things. Politically, it's going to be hard to get it through. It really will. This is really a hard one because it is going to be a job killer. They all are, but the big mergers are that way. And this one's an easy one to say no to, which is really we're going to let these guys control even more of the media, right? But the answer is, Kevin, it's not. I don't think it's bad for the consumer at all. There's still so much competition that these guys do have to merge. And they may say no, or they may have so many things that they have to spin off that it's like, well, what's the point? We're not going to do this. In other words, they may restrict it so badly. We allow it, but both companies have to walk away. We'll see if the environment is too toxic for them to do it, but the reality is, as we all know, the media content is one section, and the distribution is just wide open. There's content being made by everybody, and their distribution is being made by everybody now. So I just don't see this being, well, the only way I can get it to my house is from one cable company. That may be true in some places, but, boy, that's a really rare circumstance that you don't have Dish and Direct and two or three cable companies and all that are available for you to get your TV, let alone walking around with your laptop and Netflix or streaming,
well, not
whatever.
Well, not if you live in Caldwell, man. CenturyLink doesn't even go out to some of those places.
Well,
all you got is Cable One.
Cable One is it. What about Dish?
Well,
what about Direct?
I'm talking for Internet. I mean, because you got the cord cutters and everything.
Oh, okay.
I was talking to a lady in Caldwell. She goes, I'd like a little more choices. But you're right. For the big cities, for where the population is, you have a ton of choices. Coming up next, Dave Petso, the champion of Apple, will take a look at their new laptops, what it means for you, and we'll talk a little politics. I know Dave is reluctant to get into that field, but we'll see if we can get him to do that next. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO. 580 KIDO.
Yeah, you would know because you use that computer. Kevin Miller with Dave Petso here, 580 KIDO. So before we get to Apple's news, let's talk a little bit about the presidential campaign, your thoughts and the emails, and what does this mean?
Well, I think that the Republicans have to be beyond thrilled. Looking like they were in a tough situation where the Senate was going to be lost, and who knows about the House? Probably not, but a lot of seats, and now all of a sudden it looks like we have the same old Democratic Party coming alive, in other words, right out in front of everybody. And I just think it probably puts them in a much better position. And let's face it, Donald's back in the hunt. I mean, come on. This was we were just talking last week about how or at least I was. I commented
right.
That it was over, and I didn't want it to be over, but it looked over. And now it doesn't look over, does it?
It doesn't. One other issue that has been kind of overlooked is the premiums going up in Arizona, 116%.
I totally agree, Kevin. I think that's a big part of this too, right? And I hope the Donald does that. I hope he actually hits on some of the other things besides, because all the surrogates and all the media is going to take care of the leak to emails for him, as well as the fact that the FBI is crawling all over 650,000 of these. It's been a boggled situation. She should be in jail. That's pretty clear to anybody. But at the same time, I should say not anybody. I guess the most partisan of people don't think so. But the reality is nobody else but Hillary would have got away with this. And now they're saying she's not going to get away with it. And I think there's an awful lot of there, or they would never have done this 11 days before the election. So I think that's the conclusion that most people are going to be drawing. And I think that's really bad news for Hillary, given that Trump was already surging. Hopefully he'll stay on the message for the other things you're talking about, which is, to me, is huge. Obamacare is a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. We're saying we're going to build jobs, we're going to have more jobs. We're not going to with Obamacare because employers can't afford to hire people. We're not going to if what you do is you tell employers that make any amount of money that instead of paying 50% tax, we need to go to 70 or 80. They're just going to stop working. They're not going to hire. They're not going to expand. And that is going to hurt the workers, if you will, that we're supposedly helping. That's the, quotes, intended, although they call it unintended consequence. Well, no, that's going
to
happen.
I need you to put on your psychologist or sociologist hat here at 580 KIDO. When we have this disaster, we have Michelle Obama talking about the great journey and we need to continue it. Obama popular in the polls. How come people haven't pinned it on this guy that got it passed through some procedural thing? The funding has been ruled unconstitutional. It goes on and on and on. It's a disaster. The premiums are exploding. How does he get away with, oh, it was such a wonderful joyride?
Okay, first of all, I think psychology is the art of making stuff up. So, but here's what my made-up answer is.
We do that all the time.
I know.
You're right.
You can call me doctor.
Right.
Because I'm just going to make this stuff up.
I would love to see your bedside manner. But anyway, please go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of jokes to go with that one. I'm going to leave them all right there. And I know that my friends are going to be very surprised that I left it right there.
Sure.
But anyway, so here's what I think. I think that people who are who think Obama's are okay, either A, don't think very well, or B, because, or they just don't think at all, because all they're thinking is, wow, he's a pretty cool guy. He seems like he's a nice guy because he doesn't do anything. He does nothing. He hangs out at late night TV. He goes and plays golf with Tiger Woods. And
right.
He's awful. He's been a horrifying president. Now, you take that and you say, well, that's not even possible if you think. But let's take it further. How can he possibly, to your point? Here's how. Our presidential candidates are Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Now, compared to them, can we just go to the old days, maybe? The old days? Like, I just want the guy that goes and plays golf and doesn't do anything.
But when you look at the financial ramifications,
I know.
Even if you like the guy, he's been a disaster.
I know.
And you look at the Middle East, you look at everything.
Everything he does has been ruined, and it's unbelievable. I can't think of a thing that he's done.
He's the only guy that got away with ripping off the old people.
Right.
No social security. Yeah, no Social Security increase. And remember, that was the Rubicon, the river that you didn't cross ever. You always gave a generous cost of living increase to Social Security recipients. He didn't. He
right.
stuck it to them.
Right, right.
I'm amazed.
He isn't, and he's not fixed anything on the inner cities. I mean, the list goes on
right.
of failed opportunities. It's unbelievable. And our corporate tax, we're now the highest corporate tax nation in the world. How do you compete globally? I mean, the disaster globally that will have repercussions for the next decade or two, I can't think of a president because Carter didn't cause this much damage long term. He just was stupid and left early. And nothing was this long term. This guy has got long term damage that is just going to be go on and on and on and on and on.
I love that, stupid and left early. I don't think it was his choice to leave.
No, it wasn't.
He was shown the door.
Yeah. Yes, he was shown the door. Yes. He wasn't smart enough to leave on his own.
So Apple finally has decided to update its laptops, the MacBook Air, the MacBook Pro. It's thinner, it's lighter, it's about the same amount of money. Is this going to help or hurt the most profitable or one of the most profitable companies in the world?
The most profitable, yes. Yeah, it will. It's not a big needle mover, because when you talk about the most profitable, these guys are so profitable. It's like, you know, 70 million, or what was it, 45 million iPhones this last quarter. And that was a bad quarter.
Right.
It's astounding. It's astounding. I'll give you an idea, Kevin. If you just count the cash, which is $250 billion for Apple, $250 billion, they would be the ninth largest company in the S&P 500 if you just took it and separated out the cash.
Right.
That's crazy. That's just crazy how profitable they are. So the answer is, it's not going to move the needle much, except it keeps them on top, right? And so people want to upgrade, yes, but it also says, hey, we still are the best. You stay with Apple. You stay in our ecosphere. You buy our apps. You hang with us, and we will power all of your devices. It's a very powerful thing when they continue to have cutting-edge technology. That feeds every part of what they do.
Then again, you have to wonder if they've jumped the shark, like everybody, because you've got a fairly new phone, I've got a fairly new phone, and you know, some people live without the phones, and they're fine with it.
I know.
And I mean, I'm looking at a 7, and I mean, I have somebody here at the workplace, oh, I got to get the 7. Why? Well, because it's the thing to get. Well,
yeah.
Okay, buddy.
I know. People are all about their toys.
Right.
The millennials are, Kevin. So it's a different – if we have to shift a little bit in our thinking, because you and I don't go around going, whoa, dude, yeah. You
let's got take a selfie.
On,
yes.
Because that's the new one. Yeah.
We should take a selfie. Yes.
Yeah, I need a selfie stick for that. But I, you know, God, it is a crazy different world,
right.
Okay? And you and I might take 5 pictures to 500 for what millennials take, right? It's a different mindset. But they do help fuel that growth in the new. But here's what people are missing and why the upgrades are there, Kevin. I went to the 6 from the 4.
Right.
Or I'm sorry, the first series of 5. So mine was way old. I could have upgraded, but I didn't until I thought, I got it. It's time. I'll go and get a new one. And then you get the newest. We're in an upgrade cycle for people like you and I
right.
that don't upgrade every chance we get, or I can't wait for the new phone. New phone, who cares? But our older phones are getting older, and people are switching. And that's what we're seeing, is the upgrade cycle is much stronger than people thought, not because the phone is, wow, not, you know, it doesn't have that many new features, but they are ready for a new phone.
Dave Petzl, we always appreciate you. Thank you for the tease for the upcoming Money Matters. Saturdays, 8 to 10, in its 30th year here at 580KIDO.
Thanks, Kevin. Always good to be with you. Take care.
You're listening to 580KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzl. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzl on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. All right, it's 580-5436, and thank you. This is a special program, if you will. Hey, in the next hour, I'm going to be, I already did, and you will hear it, an interview with Micron's spokesperson, and I think it's pretty interesting. We haven't done it for a while, and of course, as Idaho's biggest private employer, Micron's rather important, and certainly its stock and the outlook for the company has changed dramatically both directions in the past year. With the stock peaking out in the 30s, falling all the way down to 10, actually a little bit below 10, and then having an amazing 2016, up 70%, 70%, as the stock is up $17, $18 per share. Quite a dramatic turnaround both directions. And so we're talking chip prices, new technology, and all of the things Micron. So anyway, that'll be in the second hour. It's overdue, and so we do have 30 minutes here or so to visit with you at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. So please do join us, but we will not be live in the second hour. So, you know, I before we get to Jim here real quick, I wanted to mention this because I think it's an interesting time as we talk about the elections. And I'll circle back to this. But think about this as we are absolutely certain of what markets will do or not do based on certain outcomes. And in a time when we have a very strong opinion about whether we are going to vote for Hillary Clinton, whether we can, or if we do, that's a signal that our country has completely rolled over and we accept corruption the way a banana republic would, and that's and that's okay. And so it's in our mind, it's not okay, and we're pretty freaked out by that. And on the other hand, we have somebody who many say will go in and will be anti-trade, things like that. And so we wind up in a circumstance where we can't win, and here's what I'm sure is going to happen in the markets. It'll tank, it'll do this, it'll do that. And the reality is we don't know. We don't know what markets are going to do or how people are going to react to the news. We don't. People say that the market is under stress right now because Donald Trump has moved up in the polls and the market wants Hillary Clinton. Is that true? I don't know. Maybe that is true. But what we say as fact or state has a political bias, and we don't really know what markets are going to do. Because the reality is neither of these candidates seems to be beloved by markets or anybody. So we'll have to wait and see. But when we see a market that's as this one is, you just have to recognize that why in the world would anybody buy right now? And we'll circle back to this in a little bit later. But why would you buy? And with an absence of buyers, it doesn't mean everybody's selling. But you get a few sellers with no buyers is a down market. It's not a down bad market. It's just a bleh. Market doesn't want to finish up on any particular day. But one of these days, it'll just do that. And that's what we often forget. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's go to Jim. Jim, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Morning, Dave. How's it going?
Good. Good, sir.
Yeah, I don't care if I lose my fiscal ass, if Hillary gets elected, but I don't like Hillary. But, when you were talking to Kevin Miller, and he mentioned, I don't like Obama, but he said, that Obama was screwing seniors. Now, as I understand it, a president has nothing to do with increases in Social Security. That's attached to the inflation index.
Well, Jim, I would agree with you. It doesn't. It's not. It's tied to that. And the feeling is the president always gets credit or blame for whatever happens. Now, 90% of whatever happens, the president has absolutely no jurisdiction over, maybe even a higher percentage.
Right.
But the fact that he's in charge implicates, whatever the Fed is doing, which is supposed to be independent.
Right, right.
So I agree with what you're saying. I totally understand. But whatever it is, the president is going to get the credit or the blame.
That's
true. The stock market's doing well, that must be Obama.
That's true.
Really, what policy would you point to that the market would love?
Well, I bought some stocks yesterday. And you want to know how I feel when I buy stocks?
I assume you feel great because you buy them all the time. You don't sell them very often.
This is going to be a first on your program. I'll bet you've never heard this described this way. I get an orgasmic high.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, I really do. I get excited, and then after I've bought them, then there's kind of a letdown. But, Dave, I will tell you what I don't like about Wall Street. I don't like conglomerates, These corporations, they should take the billions of dollars that they're hoarding and pay dividends rather than going out and buying other corporations. You know, they're just getting bigger and bigger. I mean, I checked my money yesterday, and I found out I had $5,000 extra. Well, this Genesee in Wyoming, they're like Buffett. They're like a vacuum cleaner. They go around and they buy all these small railroads. Well, mm-hmm. they bought me out of Providence and Worcester, so then I bought 100 shares of them. But if they would take at least a portion of the money that they're conglomerating, getting, and paying dividends, I think it would be better.
Well, now that's some of them. Now, Buffett doesn't pay a dividend, but the
I know he doesn't.
Amount of
I know
dividends
he doesn't.
Being paid. But
no, he just buys other corporations.
It's huge. It's huge, Jim. It's never been this large by any stretch. They are paying out a lot. They really are.
Who is?
Well, most corporations. I'm just saying the S&P has never had higher dividends.
I know.
Up every year.
Well, you're always talking and using as an example Procter & Gamble as they pay dividends. As most of apparently, I mean, especially older people, they want a return and a yield, which is good.
Yes.
And that's good. That's good. A corporation should do that rather than just going around buying other corporations.
Well, it depends on what you're looking for. And I enjoy, for example, owning Google, which continues to do well in that space, and investing in artificial intelligence and all those other things.
Well, I'm for competition.
I'm for competition,
capitalism.
Well, I'm just saying, on the other hand, you've got your consumer products like Procter & Gamble and even nowadays Apple, which are paying out tremendous and rising dividends. And so that's the beauty of the market, though, Jim, is that some companies are meeting the needs for different people and different investors, and that's a perfect market. We choose as a company to reinvest all of our capital back, whether it's buying companies or R&D on our own, and other companies like a Procter & Gamble, utilities, things like that,
well,
they are paying out most of their profits.
Okay, what would happen? What would happen if Buffett decides he wants Procter & Gamble? You know,
well,
he buys it, no more dividends.
Well, what do you mean? If he did, he'd be, and he was able to offer a high enough price that shareholders would take it, then he would own it. But what are you saying?
And then there would be no of the people you're talking about that would want to buy Procter & Gamble and get dividends would be up a creek.
Well, they wouldn't be up the creek. They'd have a pile of money, a bigger pile than they have now, and they'd go out and have to go find another one. They'd have to go buy Clorox or something. But
well, then Buffett will buy Clorox.
He's not going to buy them all.
Well, he's trying.
He's going to buy them all.
But that's my bitch.
Anyway. I got you. All right.
Well, so we'll have a nice election day.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to say the least.
Well, you know,
actually.
I mean, they've actually said, and this could be, that if Hillary got elected, she may be the first one to immediately get pardoned from, you know, or impeached.
Mm-hmm. I know. Well, it doesn't matter when the Justice Department is as corrupt as it is.
True.
They won't bring in charges, so there you go.
And, you know, what gets you is this is supposed to be, you know, we think of the United States of America as being fair, you know. And our little bubbles are being burst all over the place.
Well, they are. This is a very sad thing because you're really looking at a potentially, you know, the banana republic of America.
I know.
That there's just never been this level of corruption by any politician that was is actually being elevated to the highest office in the country, in the world. That's astounding.
Well, I think that's how standards have changed, you know, the millennials or whatever. All of a sudden, corruption just simply is another word. It doesn't matter anymore.
No, honor and corruption, you're right.
Sad.
All right, Jim, I
got
to roll.
Bye-bye.
You take care, too. Bye-bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We need to take a quick break, and our final segment upcoming. Hope you'll join us. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Dave Pezzo on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. Hey, if you have a question or comment, give us a call in the next few minutes. We are out of here. The second hour is going to be a recording from this past week with Micron spokesperson. Again, it's been a long time since we've done this, so it was time to get with Micron, our largest employer, and I thought it was really interesting, all the new things they're working on, and the fact that chip prices are getting better. It is the largest private employer in Idaho. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy when you think about the economic impact for all these decades that it has been in Idaho. Just an enormous company, and of course, a global company. But anyway, that's going to be in the second hour, and hopefully you enjoy it. And we'd love to hear your feedback, really, on these types of things. You have some other ideas of interviews you'd like to hear. Got some thoughts coming up of some ones we want to try, you know, investor attitudes. I should say attitudes. I mean emotions, things like that. We'll talk to some people. But anyway, we got a few ideas. If you do, please do let us know. That's petsofinancial.com. Love to hear from you there. All right. This is tough. A tough time, I should say, to be investing. It really is. There's so much going on out there. It is hard. It's hard when we look at our country and we see the potential of being a banana republic with, you know, as much corruption as there is. This is okay. It's not okay. It's not okay. And this isn't our country. And it's not over. It's never over. We always bounce back. But this type of thing is something that really throws people. It throws me, too. Because this doesn't make any sense. It really makes no sense. This person's never done anything. Hillary's never done anything in her life to employ anybody. She's only had people fired. She has corruption everywhere she goes. And it's been uncovered. It's been discovered. And she's continuing to be protected by a Justice Department that's politically biased. That's not America. It never has been. Never has. It didn't matter if you didn't agree with somebody politically. Justice was justice, and it was different. If you will, the cops, the Justice Department, they were above this stuff. You know, people like the FBI. I guess they're not anymore, and it throws us. But it doesn't mean it's going to stay that way, because I think this is a wake-up call. Perhaps it is. I don't know. That's what I believe, because I believe that we got Ronald Reagan because we got Jimmy Carter. And he kind of rode into town and saved the day. Communism gone, the economy saved. I mean, it was really our feeling about our country completely changed. And I do believe that that's going to happen again, regardless of who the president is. It's just not where we're going to stay. But when we think of things economically, it does get hard. When we look at Obamacare and the explosion of premiums that aren't even accounted for, as we think about what is the economic impact over the next year and two and three, when employers won't hire, can't afford it. When families have $200, $400, $600 a month more in premiums, when this happens, it impacts the economy. It's devastating. And it is. So are we going to be slowing down? Possibly. Going to zero? No. We've had slow growth. We've had slow growth for the last 8 years. Really growing. But, you know, the thing is that companies are waiting. Capital spending is down. Way down. And that's going to impact in the coming year as well. But it's impacted now as well. So we've already seen that in the numbers. So when people talk about capital spending and it won't happen and companies are not comfortable with what's going on out there, sure. They will continue to be uncomfortable. And when we are talking about a tax system that has the highest corporate taxes in the world, that's anti-growth. High personal tax rates and going after those people that run small businesses with higher taxes and more regulation is anti-growth. So a slow economy going forward seems certain it does. But corporations will and always do bounce back regardless of what is going to happen this Tuesday. I hope everybody has a great weekend and a good week next week. We'll talk to you live next week.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. And, we try to get Micron in as the biggest private employer in the state, certainly here in the Valley, and get you guys in to talk once in a while. But, you know, Ivan Donaldson, Vice President in charge of Investor Relations, I guess I should actually introduce you. But we haven't had you in for a while. It's been quite a while, actually.
Yeah.
So, thanks for joining us today, and let's dive in, if you will, Ivan, and talk about some of the changes. Your stock is up massively this year. I mean, like about 10, we're over 17. Stock's looking good. It's a mere 75-80% gain this year, but that kind of comes with another but. If you will, from 35-ish down to 10
right.
was a miserable experience. What, in your opinion, generally, let's start there, has changed the direction of the stock? It certainly is picking up some fans again.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Dave, appreciate you having me on. It's always good to be here. Yeah, you know, we had a, 2014 was a really tough year in the memory business. The PC market, or 2015, excuse me, 2014 was a good year. But 2015, we really saw the PC market start to collapse, frankly. So demand fell off pretty significantly in that market, which, you know, although we've diversified the business, that's still kind of a bellwether type of business for this industry. And it fell off pretty sharply, as I said. And that really continued into 2016, at least through about the first 6 months of the year.
Now, are you just talking about DRAM, or are you talking about flash? You're talking about all memory.
Yeah, you know, it certainly impacts DRAM the most, but it impacts flash as well. You know, solid-state drives, which utilize NAND flash, they're reliant on the PC market too, so it impacted that business. We saw some other areas that remained pretty strong from the mobile, the smartphone business in particular. That segment was pretty good, but, you know, the tough thing about this business is once we put manufacturing, fabs in place, it's really tough to take that capacity off. So very simple supply-demand, economics here for people. You know, supply exceeds demand, and it's really hard for us to just adjust the supply variable in this business. And that's what makes it tough to, that's what makes it volatile, a big part of what makes it a volatile business. So at the end of the day, there was too much supply given that demand had fallen off. And so we had a struggle there for a while. What you're seeing here on the recovery from the bottom, as you described, a couple things. We've seen lower capital spending across the industry, which means less supply. So that rate of supply growth has started to slow. That's always a key variable for us. The other markets outside of the PC have done a little bit better. So the server market, if you think about enterprise servers, the cloud, those businesses have been pretty robust.
Yeah, those are just this is what most people tie into, just try to bring everybody in the discussion here. What we're talking about is the warehouses of computers that sit out there, not in people's houses, but the warehouses where all the data is stored, so to speak.
This is demand created by the corporate IT shops, if you will. So companies like Micron, building out bigger infrastructure for their business. That's driven by enterprise customers like HP, like Dell, like Lenovo. And then it's also driven by this increasing new market with cloud service providers. You have companies like Google and Amazon and Facebook building their own infrastructure. So instead of even going to an HP or a Dell, they're buying components from companies like Micron and building those systems themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really big growth market for us that's been pretty strong. And then the smartphone market, again, it continues to be a very important market for both of our businesses, for both DRAM and NAND. So those other segments did enough good things to start to offset what was still a pretty sluggish PC market through the first 6 months of this year. In addition to that lower level of capital investments, so that's less supply, as I
right.
talked about earlier.
Uh-huh.
So about midway through this year, we started to see some recovery. Prices started to stabilize. They've now actually started to increase in some cases, in particular on DRAM, in particular PC DRAM,
mm-hmm.
which sort of hit a real hard bottom, and then actually prices have been going up there. So that does typically lead the stock when prices recover, and that started to happen, like I said, about June, July time frame, and it's accelerated a little bit the last 60 days or so. So it's been pretty positive.
Good, very good. That's obviously bodes well for this coming year since mm-hmm. you just had your fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because you went through a downturn, and it's been one of those things with Micron that, if you will, my observation, since I don't own Micron to trade it off of DRAM prices, and I recognize, that's another issue for you guys, and we'll come back to that and who actually is holding Micron stock later on. But for people like me, we look at the two things that I look at. Fundamentally, are we building a whole lot of new fabs in the world? And so, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. We're going to have too much supply.
Yeah.
So fundamentally, I look at from that, and I also look at how Micron's executing, bringing those prices down. Are their fabs running well? Are they getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper? So as prices naturally fall, are they going to be able to stay ahead of that curve? You had struggled with that a little bit at times over the last couple of years. How's that going now?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I'll go back to, we acquired a company called Elpida in mm-hmm. 2014. I think we spoke shortly thereafter.
Absolutely. One of the greatest buys in all of history.
Yeah, one of the greatest acquisitions ever, actually. It was a great deal. And that led us into a good place in 2014. From an earnings perspective, the stock did very well. The market was healthy. But we got into this transition phase where we needed to take the technology to that next generation, and we were trying to integrate an acquisition. So we had two technology roadmaps we were trying to combine. So in that 2015 through first half of 2016 timeframe, a lot of work was being done to sort of lay the groundwork to go to that next generation technology across our fab network in DRAM, number one. Number two, in NAND, also with a partner with Intel, we've been working on developing this technology called 3D NAND.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of put us in a bit of a holding pattern for a year or so as well to start to get ready to deploy that technology. So what that meant was we did have a period there for a year and a half or so where we didn't have a whole lot of bit growth, which is how we measure output from the fab. We didn't have a lot of cost reductions, to your point, which tends to be related to this technology deployment. And, but the good news is we'd set some pretty firm targets in terms of deploying that technology, and we've been hitting those metrics the last few quarters in a pretty good way. And so we feel like the execution's been good. There's always places you can do better, but overall we've deployed what's called our 20-nanometer DRAM, which is the latest technology generation in DRAM. That represented a majority of our fab output in the May quarter of this year,
okay.
which was really an important milestone because that's what generates the cost reductions and better output growth.
It does, but there's also a learning curve as you're manufacturing. Is the productivity, is it good, or is it now good, or did it start off in May being pretty good?
Yeah, well, leading up to May, there are some challenges to get the yields higher,
right.
the efficiency, to your point. So there's always a couple of variables of how that works in our business. You have to actually install the equipment and deploy the new technology recipes, if you will, in the fabs, and then to your point, there's a learning curve to get yields up, meaning, so we can get more output in,
right.
in those same manufacturing facilities. So that was a process that took some time, but in the May quarter, all those things started to come together across multiple variables. So we had very strong growth, very strong cost reductions, both in the May quarter and then this August quarter we just reported as well. And we expect, again, another pretty good quarter here that we're in now from in terms of those metrics. So we're still getting some benefit of that technology. And now, of course, you can never sleep in this business. So next year we've got to go to the next generation. So that's what we would call the 1X DRAM technology. And that'll be the next phase for us. But we feel good about it. We feel like we've laid this groundwork in a really strong way, and now the fabs are operating well together.
Okay, now you did shut down. Was it a plant in Italy over the past year? Is that even longer ago than that?
It's been a little longer than that.
Okay.
That was kind of a legacy fab that was outside of the real DRAM NAND network for us that we'd acquired through an acquisition of a NOR flash and what's called phase change memory company. Several years ago. But, yeah, that was a relatively minor sale.
Okay. So they weren't that much in production. Okay. So when we talk about this DRAM and flash and all those things, and you've always been known as a DRAM company, but you've been making a lot of inroads to move away from just being in that space. What is the mix now?
Yeah, DRAM's about 60% of the business today.
It still is big, then.
Yeah. NAND flash is a little over 30%, 35%. And then we've got just a little bit left in NOR flash and a couple other smaller technologies today.
So that's actually a smaller piece then. So DRAM is a bigger piece has become a bigger piece over the last year or two then.
It's moved around a little bit. You know, DRAM has gotten a little bigger after a year or two where NAND didn't grow quite as fast.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been that in that range of 50-60% of the business. Now what's changed is the end market exposure of the company where, you know, when we were primarily a DRAM company historically where that was 80-90% of the business, 70-90% of that was related to the PC market, of
right.
course. So the end markets have diversified a lot. DRAM is still a very big business for us overall, but if you think about the end markets now, PC is about 20-25% of the business as we see it, here in the near term. The mobile market's 30-35%. The server market that we touched on earlier is 20%, for example. Things like automotive, industrial, consumer electronics, that's another 25% of the business. So it's pretty diversified. But the reality is any one of those markets, you know, can swing the dynamics around from a supply-demand balance perspective. So even though the PC is smaller, when that segment fell off pretty significantly, as mm-hmm. we touched on, it impacts the other segments eventually, too, from a price standpoint. So that was the negative. Now the positive is we're starting to see some recovery in a number of those areas, and that's what's leading to a better business for us.
Good. Now, there was certainly a threat of a buyout here a while back, year-plus ago, from a Chinese firm. Of course, everybody thought that was silly, and it turned out to not be much of a real threat. But the industry seems to be merging. What do you think over the next year, 2 years? Not that, we have people knocking every day. I'm not speaking to Micron specifically, but in the industry, do you see more consolidation within the industry? And you did too, right? With, as we talked about, Elpida being the greatest deal ever. Well, that's a merger. So is that going to continue in the industry?
Yeah. Well, the DRAM industry after Micron acquired Elpida. That was in late 2013. That was probably the last big consolidation phase of DRAM. You have three players now in the DRAM business. That's 95% of the market. So it's probably unlikely DRAM gets much smaller than that.
Okay.
But in the NAND business, which again is 35% of our business and certainly could be a much larger percent of our business going forward, you still have fundamentally four technology producers, but you have six competitors in the market that are pretty big and formidable.
Okay.
So that certainly is a bigger number than DRAM, and it's hard to predict how those things might happen. I wouldn't be shocked if we wake up at some point in the future and there are fewer NAND suppliers or some combination of competitors. But it's a really complicated landscape, and it's really difficult to predict how that may happen given the players involved, because you have Micron, you have our partner Intel. You have Toshiba in Japan, a very big conglomerate with a big memory business. Their partner is Western Digital, which recently acquired a company called SanDisk.
Yep.
And then you also have the two Korean competitors, Hynix and Samsung. So it's a pretty it's a complicated what I think about really I think about it like a chessboard in this business because you have joint ventures and partnerships and different technology developers. So how those pieces all move together can be pretty complicated. But I wouldn't be surprised in one way, shape, or form if there's some consolidation. But pretty hard to predict exactly how that plays out.
Right. Exactly. Now, is Hynix viable without the Koreans propping them up anymore? Are they actually they've reached a point where they're going to stick around?
Yeah, you know, Hynix reported their earnings last night, and they had very strong numbers. So they're making you know about 35% gross margins today, which is good. You know, so they have a really strong business. I don't think there's a big risk of them going anywhere in the foreseeable future. Right. They're a strong competitor now. You highlighted they had times in the past where they weren't, and to their credit, they did a good job of getting out of that situation. They did certainly had help from the government.
Yes, they did.
Back in the early 2000 period, you know, Micron actually tried to acquire Hynix, and the government basically stepped in and provided a big bailout to them instead. But that was a long time ago, and they've done really well the last, especially, you know, 3 to 5 years, recovering and doing quite well.
A quality competitor.
Yeah, they're a quality competitor. Yeah. I would not discount them at all. They are controlled now by a company called SK Telecom, which is a really big telecommunications company mm-hmm. in Korea. So they have a big parent company now as well that can help them financially. Now, they don't need a lot of help right now with what they're doing financially right now from a margin perspective. But so I think they're a strong competitor. You know, everyone's making more money now with the market recovering. So that's going to that tide's going to lift all boats, of course. So really the consolidation question is more about just longer term if competitors see synergies in combining. And you know, that very well may not happen because it's so complicated, like I described earlier. But,
right.
You know, in a big, complex, capital-intensive industry, which the NAND flash business is, there can be some rationale to try to consolidate and save on resources and things like that. But, you know, we'll see. Just, again, hard to predict.
Exactly. Now, your cash flow during this downturn remained positive. Is that correct?
Our operating cash flow did. You know, we did burn some cash from a free cash flow standpoint. 2016 was a pretty big investment year for us.
Okay.
You know, we deployed that technology we talked about earlier.
Yep.
So in the DRAM business, some of the advanced technology there. In the NAND business, this 3D NAND technology also required a lot of capital to put that technology in our fabs. We also built a new shell manufacturing facility in Singapore, part of our NAND operation there. And we built an R&D facility here in Boise also. So we had some pretty big investments that we made this year. So we did burn some cash related to those. But the reality is that those investments are what position the company
right.
to grow faster, to be more cost efficient as we look forward the next 18 to 24 months.
Good, good. Well, we got to take a quick break here. And when we come back, let's talk about the future. But I want to talk about specifically in that future, what's going on with China? Are they really going to get into this business? There's a lot of rumblings about them doing it. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of Money Matters. I'm here with Ivan Donaldson, who's the Vice President in charge of Investor Relations at Micron. And we try to do this once a year. We've been a little bit late on that, but we got it done. And
yep.
And part of the reason I wanted to talk about this is at this time is that you've kind of gone through the downturn, as we discussed in the first segment. Chip prices are coming back. Micron's in a pretty good position, cash flow-wise, mm-hmm. technology-wise. If you will, unless you're guessing the direction of chip prices, which is pretty difficult to do.
Yep.
Boy, it is amazingly hard to do when you stop and think about there's really not that many inputs, right? How much production's coming and from those suppliers and then how many people, how much demand there is. That, you know, that's basically what we're trying to figure out for chip prices. nobody ever gets it right.
Yeah. Well, there's about a million variables that go into those two outputs.
You're
right.
That's true. That's right. You're exactly right.
But yeah, you're right. No, it is. You would think it would be easier than the reality.
It is. Yeah. You would think somebody would get it right once in a while, but yeah. it's a very tricky thing. But you guys are in a pretty good position fundamentally, as I see it, coming out of this. So I thought it would be great to talk about this. But I really want to kind of focus right now on what's going on rumor-wise that China's going to be getting into the business. Now, they've avoided this. And if I can give just a little backdrop to that first.
Sure.
Why would China not get in the business? You know, because they've got cheap labor, things like that, just to kind of bring everybody on this. Your biggest cost is not labor. It's equipment. And it doesn't matter if you're in China, you're in the USA, you're in New York City. That equipment's going to cost the same. And it's the vast majority of the cost. And so China is trying to employ a lot of people. That's not a great way to employ a lot of people per dollar. So they've not been in it. But now there's rumors they're going to do 6 or 8 or something. Fabs and other places are talking about it. What do you see happening over the next year or two? And do you see a lot of new fabs coming?
Yeah. Well, you're right that in the memory business, you think about in businesses there are barriers to entry, right?
Yep.
And in the memory business, it's capital, so dollars, and it's technology. Those are the two big moats or barriers to entry around this business. And historically, China has not – they've tried actually a few times to sort of play around the periphery of this business fairly unsuccessfully.
Mm-hmm.
Because they lack the technology. They've always had the ability
to – just steal it, so.
Well, that's another topic. You might be right. That's a risk. I agree. But that sort of kept them at bay, the technology aspect of that barrier to entry. To your point, DRAM, NAND, our technologies, our businesses, they aren't big employment drivers. Now, they tend to be fairly high-paying jobs. That's all good.
Right.
But what you're seeing now in China is a stated desire to get into this business and a lot of other semiconductor businesses. Think of this as a broad sort of push from the central government to have a local semiconductor industry. And their rationale for that is more so now along the lines of for national defense issues, to be able to be independent, if you will, of these other countries, which would be the U.S., which would be Korea,
right. Yeah.
Which would be Japan, which are, you know, countries which have had some tensions with China, obviously. So their stated intention is, okay, we want to have some of our own local production capability and technology capability so that for defense purposes, et cetera, they're able to, you know, insulate themselves from disruption potentially. That's the motivation, supposedly, of what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, you come back to what I said before. Capital and technology are the barriers to entry. They have a lot of capital. They have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're hearing about in the news are stated plans to build manufacturing plants, to get into maybe the logic business or the memory business, again, a number of different areas. And so there is the potential for capital dollars to be put into that business. But what they still lack is the technology.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's a risk we have to keep our eye on and be cognizant of. The reality is, you know, Micron's been in this business for over 30 years, as you know. Our competitors that do things well have, in one form or another, been in this business for 20-plus years in most cases. Maybe they've combined with other companies over time. But the foundation of those businesses has a long history. You know, we have millions of man hours of know-how and capability across the company in terms of how this technology works. And that's not to mention actual fundamental intellectual property and patents that are required to be in this business.
It's almost like you don't just open up a fab, even if you have the technology and think everything's going to work okay. There's really key people in there, right, that are like running the shifts and making sure things are actually being produced. The yields are high, all those things. So it's not just technology that we all know the Chinese steal. So they're going to go steal that. That's okay.
This isn't a product that you can reverse engineer, put it that way. You know?
Interesting. That's a really, yeah.
You know, there's always a risk that they could get into your server or there could be a theft of technology, kind of these recipes of how the product is built.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But even that, even if you've got electronic data, that's still to your point. You need to have people in the fab, on the ground, that know how these things work. I mean, you could go spend billions of dollars to buy the equipment and build these beautiful manufacturing fabs and facilities, but you may not be able to make anything if you don't have that. So I don't want to underplay it that it's no risk or that it's impossible, because I don't think you never say that in the technology business, right?
That's right. That's true.
But we think it's going to be very, very difficult. We think that, the technology that we've developed over decades is really, really difficult to replicate. So we need to keep our eye on it and make sure we're engaged there, thinking about opportunities as well. But at the end of the day, competitively, from a threat standpoint, we think that it's going to be very difficult for China to just parachute into this business, especially in a, you know, 5-10 year type of time horizon. Again, I think any time in technology get further out than that, then who knows what could what could change. But that technology barrier to entry is quite high.
Yeah, it doesn't seem likely, because of all the tension, that they're going to pick up a merger that they would love to pick up the technology. Nobody's going to allow that. I would think, with all the tension going on, that suddenly you're going to find Hynix being bought by the Chinese, or they have a joint agreement so that they can have all that technology. Am I right about that?
No, or? I think it's pretty difficult. The governments in those countries, whether it's the U.S., whether it's Korea, whether it's Japan, there is some control over which companies are bought and sold, obviously. And you know, in the U.S., we have a process called CFIUS, which would review, you know, acquisitions by foreign entities of U.S. companies. So that's straightforward, just China coming in and buying a company. Again, it's not impossible, but it's pretty difficult, pretty high hurdle rate, I think, in most places to do that directly. There are maybe some ways of where they could maybe try to work with a company more indirectly that maybe would be a little bit easier to do. But just again, coming in and buying a big semiconductor company would be fairly difficult. They've managed to buy a few smaller companies here and there, not on the scale anywhere of what Micron or any of our competitors do, but they've been able to do a little bit of that around the fringes here and there. But it certainly has a big spotlight in Washington.
I'll bet.
From our leaders, and you know, as it should. I mean, technology is important for our security and national defense and jobs and tech and you know, economic growth, all those things as well.
Right. Exactly. All right, let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, I want to talk some more, actually, about the future.
Great.
And also what the threats are to Micron. If it's not the Chinese, it's somebody. We'll dig into that after this.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. With Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Hello and welcome to the special edition of Money Matters. Hey, about once a year, we like to try to get with Micron and find out what's going on with our huge local company, employing thousands of people, you know, 5,000 or something like that locally, and 30,000 people globally. It's just a massive company. And we just sometimes say, well, how's Micron doing? And, you know, but it's so important to the local economy. There's no question the jobs, and really actually jobs globally and in the United States. There's several thousand more jobs than that spread out around the United States, so as well as all over the world. So it's a big, big company. But Ivan Donaldson, the Vice President of Investor Communications, thanks for joining us. I want to jump into the future now. Okay,
great.
A little bit. Okay, and talk about, we talked about China. We've talked about, you guys are in a good fundamental position right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that can change overnight. We all know that. But really, it because these fabs have such lead times, are there any of your competitors or anything else? We talked about the Chinese already. Anybody out there that is expanding production rapidly, or can you foresee a pretty good runway right now?
Yeah. Well, part of the health of the DRAM business, because I'll split the business up kind of the two big areas. In the DRAM business, which, as we talked about earlier, is about 60% of the business today, there's really three competitors: Micron, Samsung, and Hynix. Samsung and Hynix both being in Korea. And part of the maturation of that business to become more stable, still cyclical and still volatile, but not nearly the rate of volatility we had in the past, part of that is driven by this consolidation that's happened. So we're down to three players. The supply side of it, to your question, is pretty contained. It appears that all of the competitors are taking a pretty conservative approach in terms of how we add supply to the business, which is a big variable. You know, supply demand, again, the two big variables in demand, and supply is the big one, and that's the one that can move within, you know, it takes a year or so to really move the needle in a big way. But if somebody decides to build a new fab to add capacity, that can be certainly disruptive if it's not done in a thoughtful way. So this is part of, I think, the health and the attractiveness of the business now as we look forward, is you've got three suppliers that should be focused on profitability as opposed to just market share. And that tends to lead itself to better profitability over the long term. We think a good case study is, you know, we post-consolidation in roughly 2014, the industry had a very good year in 2014 period, including Micron. We did go through a cyclical downturn, as I talked about earlier, the next 18 months, basically 2015, first half of 2016. But as we feel like we were coming out of that downturn, and Micron made small profits in fiscal 2016 that we just reported. If we go back to prior years when we experienced these downturns, Micron lost a lot of money, you know, talking about negative gross margins in the business, a lot of cash burn, very, very disruptive to the business. And so while it's not ideal to lose any money,
right,
or to burn any cash as we did last year, we still look at prior cycles and say, look, this is a better business than we've had in the past.
Yeah.
And a big part of that is the supply control, if you will, for lack of a better term. And so that does create a pretty favorable view as you look at the business moving forward. Now, in NAND, the other side of the business, there are some capacity expansion plans going on across the business and the industry, including for Micron. We have pretty aggressive growth plans in the next year or so as we bring some new fabs online, as we deploy this 3D NAND technology, which is the new technology we've developed in NAND flash for storage capability. And some of our competitors are doing similar things. What makes NAND different, though, is that the end demand, the end markets, are growing fast enough that we feel like there's room to add supply at this point. Now, again, I think the competitive landscape is a little more complicated.
Yeah.
Because you don't just have three players. You have kind of six players.
And they're probably all doing the same thing you're doing.
And everybody has to you know, jockey for which markets they want to go after and how aggressive do you want to be. So that one's a little harder to predict. I think that we see a lot of untapped growth going forward there. So, again, there's investments required to address that growth, but if you do it in the right way, then there should be a good return on that investment long term. And so we're very bullish on that business, but it's going to be, you know, a little bit more dynamic probably than the DRAM business going forward. It's probably going to grow faster, but it's also, that means you got to put more capital and more dollars into it to address that growth.
Now, so with everybody adding in that space, obviously, you know, they're not looking at the market and going, no, you guys go ahead and add and make more money and we won't. So everybody's doing the same thing. So we may have a bit of oversupply in NAND, but that's a pretty small part of your business, but you're growing it.
Correct.
You're planning on growing it. Now, when we look at that and talk about the 3D NAND and things like that, and you adding new fabs, do you mean literally a new fab or do you mean a new line in a fab, existing fab?
Yeah. Well, so what we did last year was we built a new shell facility that basically essentially bolted on to an existing fab in Singapore.
Okay.
So you can think of it as essentially like a new fab, but it just creates a much bigger operation there for NAND flash production in Singapore.
Okay.
Now, that fab isn't full yet. It's just we're starting to add equipment and capability there to add output growth, and that'll take – you know, probably another year and a half or so to do that. So it's not all going to happen at once. Micron's taking a relatively measured approach to how we do that because we don't want to disrupt the market or spend the capital too fast and have some sort of a big overhang that can occur. So we're going reasonably conservative on that, but it's this fine line balance of you want to get efficient, and having scale, economies of scale adds to your efficiency. You want to grow with the market and address demand growth, and you want to be cost effective as well, right? And so we need to shrink the size of the chips we produce so we can produce more bits on a wafer. This is the classic driver of this business, and then your cost per unit comes down. We need to do all those things and then still look at that end market and figure out what supply-demand looks like. We think, you know, 2017 looks actually pretty healthy. in the NAND business too. We don't see overly aggressive supply in that sort of time frame. I'm just acknowledging that, look, it's a business that is going to grow fast. It does require these capital dollars to be put in, and the competitive landscape is complicated. So that one's a little bit harder to predict probably than DRAM.
Right, right. But the DRAM has only got basically three competitors, and so it's a little more measured.
That's right. That's right.
And although DRAM, we always think of it as like dumb chips. These are dumb chips are in everything, though. Mobile or not, right?
They're not too dumb. I mean, they're pretty advanced technology in reality. I think that does tend to be the rap. You know, and even why maybe historically people have thought countries like China could just, you know, get into this business. It's pretty complicated.
I imagine it is. Yeah.
It's some of the most advanced technology in terms of semiconductors. It is different than NAND, you know, but so NAND flash is your storage memory, what stores data permanently. DRAM is basically what executes the code storage out of whatever electronic device you have, whether it's a PC or a smartphone or an automobile. Like you said, almost everything that is an electronic device probably has some amount of DRAM in it.
Right, but when you turn it off, it doesn't store the
that's
way
right,
NAND
that's
does,
right.
right? Isn't that basically the fundamental?
Yep.
Not fundamental, that's the... For us laymen, the basic difference.
That's
correct?
The basic difference. And then what makes DRAM important, however, is that it's very, very fast. So it's able to access that data immediately, very, very quickly, orders of magnitude faster than what that other technology, NAND, can do.
Interesting.
Now, we have introduced
is why there's both in it.
Which is why there's both, correct. You know, all these devices increasingly have both.
Yeah.
Now, we have invented a new technology with our partner Intel called 3D XPoint, which is really interesting. It's the first fundamentally new technology that's come into the memory business in over 20 years. And it essentially sits between DRAM and NAND in terms of those dynamics of it can store data like NAND flash. So you can store your pictures, your photos. You can store data in a server, and that'll stay there. And you can also execute data pretty quickly like DRAM. But it's essentially a middle ground. It's not as fast as DRAM.
Okay.
It's not as cheap to store data as NAND. But there are a lot of applications where our customers want that sort of combination, you know, right down the middle application, if you were a technology.
Instead of using both, they want it all in one. Why?
Well, simplification is one reason. There are some applications where, you know, instead of buying two or three or four different components to achieve what they're trying to do, if they can buy one simple technology that's sort of an elegant solution, that can be attractive for them. In some cases, they'll certainly still buy the other memory technologies too, but it's just another way to add more.
Okay.
So they may still buy a lot of DRAM or a lot of NAND.
Is it a size issue then? I mean, you know, we can put more of that in the phone.
Right.
For example?
Yeah, that can be part of it.
Okay.
That can be part of it.
Well, the reason I ask is because in my mind, I'm trying to figure out why would you use this if it slows it down. Everybody's like, I need faster, 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 more processing. And you're telling me now I'm going to be slower and not have the memory capability of a flash.
No, it wouldn't be slower necessarily. Again, it would depend on how exactly you architected the device. So you were holding up your mobile phone, for example, there. You could take this new technology, 3D XPoint, and replace some of what's stored on your phone in terms of, like, your operating system and things like that. And you could store some of the data that you access a lot, maybe your contacts, maybe your often used files, things like that. But you still could have some very fast DRAM that sits next to that. You still could have a flash card, for example, to store lots of data, you know, for your videos and all those type of things that you don't look at every single day, but
right.
you want to, you know, have 256 or 500 gigabytes of storage on your phone these days.
Right.
So, but still that type of application or this technology can provide the phone would perform better. Now, you know, it's going to cost those phone suppliers, you know, some amount of money to do it that way, but
sure.
that's good for us, right?
It is,
I mean,
right.
And for us to be able to control that technology ecosystem more is good for Micron.
Gotcha. Well, good. All right, we got to take our final break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about the future of mobile as well as computing. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station.
Back, and welcome to the special edition of Money Matters. And, of course, I'm Dave Petzo, but I'm here with Ivan Donaldson, who is Micron's spokesperson. That's kind of what we always think of you as, is the You're the vice president in charge of investor relations, a much deeper, bigger picture than that. Hey, I want to talk. Let's talk about some of the interesting things coming down the pike. Interesting, frightening, scary, AI, supercomputing. What are human beings going to do? Graphics, all the things that are just with technology being so exponential, it's just hard for us to even imagine where we're going to be in three to 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, let alone 10 or 20. And so it's one of those things. What are you guys working on that you can share? You know, if you want to share your top secret stuff, that's fine too. Whatever you can share with us, I think it would be very interesting to hear what you guys are working on to stay cutting edge.
Great. Yeah. It's never dull. There's always a lot of always change, right?
Yeah.
Constant change in this business and then the technology industry overall. You know, if you think about today, you've got more computing power in your smartphone that everybody walks around with that you had in your computer just a few years ago. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And I still, anytime someone says, gee, we must be reaching a limit, you know, you need to discount that pretty heavily because innovation will continue to happen. There will be new applications, new technologies that will get people excited and you know, so you touched on a few of them. Autonomous driving is a big theme in the technology world now. To your point, a little scary when you think about cars driving around town with no driver. There are ranges of autonomous driving capabilities. There's all the way from a lot of vehicles that are on the road today that maybe can self-park, that can do some things, and maybe even drive down the road with a driver there that has an ability to still grab the steering wheel, right?
Right.
And apply the brakes. And there's a spectrum that then goes all the way to the other end, which is full autonomous driving, where literally you wouldn't need to be in the driver's seat. And it's pretty amazing that they're working on some technology like that will be here in the not-too-distant future. Tesla recently talked about their next generation of vehicles will have some full autonomous capability. And specific to the memory business, what we can address, they'll use some processors that rely pretty heavily on some advanced DRAM we produce called GDDR5X, which is a graphics DRAM. They could also maybe use some other next-generation DRAM or memory technology. That actually wouldn't be technically DRAM, be slightly different, but that is super double secret, so I can't tell you about that one.
Okay. All right. Maybe next time.
But clearly, you know, innovation isn't stopping, and you know, that's one thing we think about at Micron is what we develop from an innovation standpoint enables our customers and to do some of these really amazing things. So, you know, we're not obviously making smartphones, we're not making PCs, we're not making tablets, we're not making vehicles, but we're making some really amazing technology from a memory perspective that is absolutely critical for those end devices to work.
You're making those work.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Making this stuff to make them work, yeah. All right, so AI, supercomputing, graphics. Mm-hmm. You mentioned you guys were working on graphics stuff for like games and things like that.
Yeah, game consoles, which would be a virtual reality application as well. Again, anytime you're talking about a more advanced technology capability from a electronics standpoint, which a virtual reality, you think about the computing power required to do that.
Yeah.
That's going to mean more memory. That's going to mean more DRAM to execute that data fast. To your point, we're producing what's called graphics DRAM, which is very, very fast DRAM, essentially is the way to think about it. So, and that's a great premium product for us, too. We generate higher margins on that product. It's a specialized type of product there. We have a leading market share there. Mm. So as you think about next generation game consoles, Sony, Nintendo, Microsoft, et cetera, as you think about virtual reality capabilities on your smartphone, on your PC, all those things are going to require robust amounts of very fast, high-performance DRAM, and they're also going to store more data. So solid-state drives is a NAND flash business where we would address that market. So it really does create this virtuous ecosystem for us as those things grow.
Absolutely. I was astounded to have right here in Boise. I couldn't believe how many people went to this virtual reality deal they had last week.
Yeah.
You know, I'm standing in line and going, what's the point? Well, it was because it was so crowded you couldn't get to try all the cool stuff. But it's amazing the interest and how many different companies right here in Idaho. This isn't Silicon Valley.
No.
This isn't New York, upstate, whatever. It is just, this is an amazing thing to think. This is like little laboratories going on all over the world.
Yeah. There's a lot of neat stuff going on here in the Valley. I agree. you know, big companies like Micron, but small companies that are making investments here, and finding out, hey, it is a great place to live and work, and it's an attractive business environment, generally low cost, certainly low cost compared to a place like Silicon Valley. So it's a great place. Micron loves it here. It's really supportive of our culture and of innovation and efficiency both, and you know, so we love being here for sure.
Good. I'm sure everybody's really happy to hear that. It would be a shame to lose Micron. All right, we got to go. And so thank you very much, Ivan. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you.